So I want to just check with you this morning. Are you feeling brave? Everybody fairly courageous this morning, ready to stretch a little spiritually? Okay? You stay right there, but we're going to stretch a little bit. Ready to try that? Okay, one of the things that I love about Unity is that we really recognize that within each spiritual tradition, there is tremendous wisdom and understanding that can help us understand and grow in our relationship and expression of the divine. And so I want to go to a spiritual tradition we haven't gone to before and take a look at something that it suggests. Now, to really look at it, maybe it helps to just start by looking at what we do when we pray. Okay, now, you know, a moment ago we were here in prayer together. Okay, and think of the perception that was there with you in that moment. Now I know for me it kind of varies, but generally I'm thinking, okay, I'm here, and I'm connecting with this beautiful divine presence that is not only within me, but everywhere. And I'm holding in my heart and in my mind someone that I care about. I'm wanting to send them that blessing. You know, whether I see that as coming from my heart to theirs, or just that desire through which there is a response within the universe of this energy and wholeness that touches and changes and brings that experience to them. Now, in some way, you know, I know we all perceive it a little different, but I think that's maybe fair for most of us, wouldn't you say that's somewhat what's going on there? In this tradition, what's going on out there doesn't matter. Because it basically teaches that if it's out there, it is simply an expression of something within you. So get rid of it. Now that's kind of interesting philosophically. And it's not a new perception. Okay, actually it shows up in a number of different religions. It shows up in a number of different teachings. This understanding that somehow with what's going on out in our world, in what we see in others, that there is some relationship to something in us. And so we have a power to make a change within and affect that. Now, what became interesting to me was some time ago, a practice of this was shared that began to challenge our understanding of what was going on and began to give an insight into the amazing power that we have to transform the outer that way. The practice that I'm going to focus on is something out of the Hawaiian tradition that's called Ho'oponopono. Many of you are aware of it. There's a wonderful book out, Zero Limits, and I warned the bookstore I was going to talk about it, so they got some. And again, the idea isn't that new. And the truth is, the practice is. Now, this that we're going to talk about today is really a contemporary practice that has built out of an ancient practice. And the ancient practice was group-oriented. This is completely individual. But the ability to use it was given an amazing focus by one of its practitioners. Now, the experience I want to share with you took place in the Hawaiian State Mental Hospital. Okay, and it was a particular unit, the unit that dealt with the criminally insane. Now, a few of you like me may have had a chance to interact with that part of our criminal justice system. If so, I'm glad that we're all here now. It's a very difficult. The people that are there because of violent crime. Very destructive, heinous actions towards other people. And keeping that, taking care of them and dealing with their mental needs is a huge challenge. Now, in Hawaii, in this unit, a man was brought in as a psychologist, one of the psychologists there. But a very interesting thing took place. First of all, he didn't do anything. I mean, he was hired to come in and, you know, be the, you know, do the counseling and all this sort of stuff with these people. He didn't do that. He didn't work with their cases. He didn't go up and interact with them and, you know, help them figure out their stuff at all. He was a person who practiced Ho'oponopono, and the teaching there was that it was all within. So he went and just worked within himself. So let me share with you a little bit of the experience that was there. Now, the first part I want to share is from the woman is a social worker who was there on the staff at the time that the man came in. The man's name is Dr. Hugh Lin. And she was describing the actual state that was being experienced. And this is just a minor part of that, but it gives you a little picture of what was going on and what was being dealt with. She said all the patients were locked in the unit 24/7, allowed to leave, escorted only in wrist and ankle restraints, you know, for just a medical or court appointments. Most of their day was spent in a seclusion room, locked with concrete walls and ceilings, locked bathrooms, no windows. Many were medicated. Violent incidents were expected occurrences. She said there were several incidents every day of violence. That would be patients attacking staff, patients attacking other patients, patients attacking themselves, and attempting escape. So again, you have this very serious states of mental illness and violence. She says it was an intense, volatile, depressing, wild place to be. So Dr. Hulin shows up as psychologist on the staff and doesn't do anything. She says, several months after the arrival of Dr. Hulin, things began to shift. Seclusion rooms began clearing. Patients began becoming responsible for their own needs and business. They also began participating in planning and implementing programs and projects by themselves. The unit became alive, calmer, lighter, safer, cleaner, more active, fun, and productive. Incidents of violence became rare. Now, he didn't do anything out there. What he did was work in here. He was there approximately 3 years. When he left, all of the patients had been released except two patients who were transferred elsewhere. Otherwise, the entire ward, this is somewhere around 30 people, were healed. Wow. He didn't do anything out there. His words, I had to take complete responsibility within myself for actualizing the problems outside of myself. He said, I had to clean my own toxic thoughts and replace them with love. Clean my own toxic thoughts and replace them with love. He goes on. There was nothing wrong with the patients. The errors were in me. Interesting understanding. Amazing results. Replace my own toxic thoughts. Replace them with love. Now, this isn't the only place where this understanding of the world we live in shows up. What actually took me back to this, and again, this the experience and the books on Ho'oponopono have been out about for a while. Very interesting. Folks have been reading and working with that. But what took me back to it was I was looking at a different thing, a different experience. Near the beginning of the effort in India to free itself from the rule of England, Mahatma Gandhi and the leaders of that time had called for a nonviolent resistance to that control. As they began, a number of incidents of violence began occurring. And Gandhi said, we have to call this off. The people around him said, it is not possible to call this off. This is a wave, a passion of energy sweeping this country. What he did was he went into a fast to remove from himself that within himself which was contributing to the violence. Now that's different. That's a little different than what Dr. Hugh Lin's talking about. He's talking about contributing to, not being the only. But in that purification of the self, and when we're talking about, Gandhi talks a lot about the experience of fast and what he does, and the non-taking of food is a minor part of it, in fact. It is a complete focus and dependence on the presence and love of God. It is a deep, rich, powerful prayer experience. As he did that, seeking to remove that within him, the violence stopped. Now, he did it several times. He also did it in the experience where there were the untouchables, and to change that consciousness, he did, you know, ask the world within the Hindu world with which those ideas were associated. And he asked them to let go and make serious changes in this deep cultural structure of discrimination. And in order to bring it about, he went into this fast, this experience of prayer, to remove from himself that discrimination. And major changes happened. He did the same thing during the violence that took place between the Muslim and Hindu peoples at the experience of independence. And the violence stopped. Well, do they have it right? It's all here?
Yes.
Well, I don't know. One of the things that I have found helpful. When I experience another set of spiritual perceptions or ideas within a cultural or a spiritual practice that may challenge some of the ways or be different than the ways that I have often seen things, is to first of all honor that understanding. Okay, whether or not I'm able to understand it or not. And sometimes I am amazed at the extent of my ignorance. Whether or not I am able to understand it, what I can do is honor it and hold it in my heart. Hold it in neutral. Don't need to agree with it. Don't need to disagree with it. But in that, what will happen is Spirit works within me to bring to me that within it which is of value in its own time and way. Is it right or wrong? Doesn't matter. It's not important. The only thing that's important is there something there that has meaning to you? And if there is, that beautiful wisdom within you can bring that forth. So let's set aside the philosophical structure under which it's taking place. And so do I. I want to touch on something here. One of the challenges of looking at some of the things within this concept is that it gives an opportunity for some of us to refine the art of guilt that we have developed. Okay. And some of us are better at that than others, okay? Some of us have had deep training in it and worked at developing it through most of our lives. So, you know, it's important when we look at this and it says, wow, this is within you. And we go, wow, what's that mean? Okay. So, that part of you that likes to do guilt, tell him or her to just take the day off. Today it's got a free day. It doesn't need to do anything, okay? And we're just going to take this idea and put it in the heart. Just hold it there and let it unfold. But there is something in here that is very clear. When we look at what he did over and over again, the response to what is perceived is, in his words, I love you. I love you. I love you. The response. Now, he's not focusing that out. He's focusing that in to that part of the self that he perceives as being activated there. And he explains that that could be a pattern. It's a pattern, some sort of memory within the subconscious. It can be personal, or it can just be part of the collective unconsciousness that, you know, we've picked up. But the response is, I love you. Now, there are other steps that he goes through, and next week I'm going to go through some of those steps because I think there's some really beautiful meaning and skill within that. But the heart of the experience is, I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. Join me. I love you. I love you. I love you. Again. I love you. I love you. I love you. So let's go back to, remember that point in our prayers? Where we were sending that love to someone in our world that we cared about, someone dear to us. Whoever it is in your world that right now you want to help free from that which they struggle with. To them, join me. I love you.
I love you. I love you.
Now to whatever within the self, if freed, would free them together.
I love you. I love you. I love you.
To that divine presence that we share in some way that we are one. To that divine presence together.
I love you. I love you. I love you.
What an amazing way to learn our oneness. That you have the power through your love to transform the world around you, this shows in no uncertain terms that it does. Whatever it is, you have that power. It is your love. And I share it with you simply because I love you.